Let me also say a little. Yeah? Maybe it's too loud, huh? Can one?
Try the button.
Hello? Yeah, that's better. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Turn a little bit up. More.
Lower.
That's fine. Lower. Okay, good. It's not customary, but let me at least thank the organizers for inviting me to such a beautiful and interesting place, and congratulate those who have worked for establishing this place here. I would like also to say something which is not so common at the beginning, because I would like to say what I'm not going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about an exciting new theory. I'm also not going to talk about a new formulation of an old theory. I'm going to talk about the equivalence of maybe two non-existing theories. My aim is much more modest. I'm going to talk about an observation which the referee said it's interesting but could have been done 10 years ago. Nevertheless, I would like to confront you with this. The reason is twofold, because first of all, it deals with extremely strong gravitational field, and therefore somehow it fits perfectly into the program. And the second thing is that there are in the audience some experts on asymptotics. Some of them left for Atlanta, but still some of them remain. And I do would like to get some feedback from what I'm going to tell you, to put that what we have done maybe on a more more mathematical basis. So I'm going to tell you, so to speak, in steps what we have done, and your comments are welcomed, and now or afterwards, or I will be here one more week, so it's time to talk about this. Well, what is it about? It is about, the title was said, it is on the energy momentum of the ultra-relativistic Schwarzschild black hole. And there's a little short paper with my co-worker Herbert Ballesin from the Technical University in Vienna. Right. Okay. I'm going to try to sustain. And let me start by some very simple observation. Suppose you take the Coulomb field of a point charge and you accelerate it to a constant speed or higher and higher velocity, then it is a textbook exercise, or even in the textbook course, one knows that the electric field gets compressed in the line of the boost and enlarged on the transversal directions. And if you take the limit at the end, you what one ends up is with a field which is purely concentrated in a two-dimensional plane, where at the center here of this plane, it still remembers that it comes from a point charge sitting here. Now, this is the three-dimensional picture. The four-dimensional picture looks somewhere like this here. The boost goes into the TZ direction, and then the electromagnetic field tensor two form is purely concentrated on a null plane, which I've tried to draw here like this, where it's outside, it is everywhere zero, and there is a singularity. I mean, everything is singular here because it's concentrated on the plane, but there is an extra singularity going along this a null line in this null plane, which resembles the charge we we got from this column. But by the way, I should emphasize it's not necessary to make any charge renormalization in this case. You just take the limit and the limit goes through without changing the parameter Q of the charge of this configuration. Now, suppose we would like to do this in gravity. Now there things are more difficult because what is a point particle is not is actually not defined. The best thing what can do, one looks to a vacuum solution which resembles outside something like a point particle, and so we take the most simplest one, namely the Schwarzschild black hole. Of course, the difficulty comes from since energy is source of a gravitational field, the boosting adds to the energy in quotation, not like for the boosting, the charge doesn't add to the charge, but in this case it does add to the energy. So in order, as the boost parameter tends to infinity or V going to the velocity of light, the mass parameter in that solution, in order to be able to obtain a limit, has to go to zero in such a way that the product of the two stays constant, if you like. Now, this is what is called the ultra-relativistic limit of the Schwarzschild black hole, and the limit for the Schwarzschild solution was obtained long ago by the late Roman Sechsel and myself, and was repeatedly obtained then by other people, which I have listed here. Let me make maybe some remarks how to get this without going into details. Well, one starts very naively. One takes something like what is called the isotropic coordinates, I think it's called, for the Schwarzschild field, which I denote like this here, and then one naively performs a boost with respect to the T and Z direction, and then the thing doesn't work. It doesn't work. One has to do an additional coordinate transformation, kind of singular coordinate transformation, to finally put it in this form. Then one could ask, is this now a coordinate dependent limit? As I have told you, this is, other people have done this in different way, and it seems to be that this limit is rather robust. There's even by McCallum a kind of coordinate independent derivation of this. So what a boost is, one knows asymptotically, but how to bring in the boost is a second question. Well, this was obtained first in this very naive way and then redone. Now, what does it look like? Well, it has the metric, the line element has a flat path, written, let's say, in this coordinate, plus an extremely ugly looking term. Namely, it has a distribution in the metric. A distribution in the metric in this mal direction, and then there's another thing here which is the logarithm of rho, where rho is this quantity here. However, this looks very badly, but it turns out it is not as bad as it looks, namely because all the quantities are well defined in the distributional sense. One would think that having a distribution in the metric, well, the inverse is not well defined. It turns out that the determinant of the metric is just a flat determinant, and therefore one G minus one exists, and therefore a volume form exists, and if one calculates the Riemann tensor, everything is linear in the, of course, derivatives, but everything stays linear in F. This is the point. Because
it's in a fixed coordinate, yeah, like this.
Right. Yes.
Your base, log rho, is there a dimensionable parameter that enters in combination with that, or is that rho in the quantity?
Well, yeah, actually, of course, one should add here a rho zero, divide by by row zero.
Right, so what sets row zero?
I don't know. I don't know.
I have another question.
Yeah.
One's not obliged to think of this as a black hole.
No.
Why can't I just take the Schwarzschild metric and imagine it to be exterior to something and then do this boost? I mean, do I have to think, I mean, this is...
Well, it is essential. It is essential because, I mean, this logarithm, I will try to tell you that this remembers several features of the Schwarzschild field. And one of them is this logarithm.
I think probably if you take the Schwarzschild, you would put that in a constant density object inside, in and out of Schwarzschild solution. If you then would do this maneuvers there, I think probably you have a limit in the input.
Is that known?
It's not known for sure, no. But I will give you some hints for it. Okay, let me... Yes, there was the point of coordinates. Okay, maybe I come back to it. Let me proceed by telling you that this metric belongs to a general class of well-studied metrics, of course not with the distributional profile, namely the so-called PP wave, namely plane front at bridge with parallel rays. And they are geometrized by the, or the, characterized by the existence of a covariantly constant null vector, which I call P. And I now I've switched to U bar and V bar coordinate. So in this case, they are T minus Z and T plus Z, so with the boost direction. And so then this is the, you see again, here's the flat part. This is the flat metric. And this is what is called the profile function. And the profile depends solely on U bar, X and Y. And here is this only the U square. And there is this null vector P, which is null, and therefore it lies in that surface here. It is a geodesic vector field whose, because this is zero, all the optical scalars vanish. And of course the killing vector of the field. Now, So this profile depends only on U, so going from one surface to the other, and in this X and Y direction, while it's propagated because it's killing along this field here. Now, in order to satisfy the vacuum equations, the two-dimensional flat Laplacian with respect to X and Y, so this is the Einstein vacuum equation for this space times here, and maybe because it was said by Bernd mentioned about the coordinate. Well, this is so to speak an adapted coordinate system to this null vector. It's a little bit more structure in it. Actually, if you don't require to be vacuum, you have to require something else. For example, that there exists a covariantly constant spinor, which has somewhat more structure.
Another direction. For the PP wave, I think the role of the coil is here. And I think what is important for your game is that the V dependence of this harmonic solution there, this is totally arbitrary for the vacuum solution. Therefore, for example,
The U dependence. For me, it's the U. Yeah.
Therefore, you can, where the delta function is in this pulse solution, there are lots of approximating plane wave solutions to solve the Einstein equation, for which the
space-time
is completely regular.
Right, so let me go some more. Let me make a remark, which I think is important. Something about the symmetries. On the last line, we have probably read it. This space-time has been completely classified in terms of the killing symmetries long ago by Ehlers et al. One of the class of special PP waves is where the function f, where the profile function has this logarithm times an h of u bar. So this is where the Schwarzschild boost falls into. And it turns out in this classification by Ehlers that this metric has two killing fields. Namely, the one is the V direction, which I've already pointed out, and the other one is clearly the rotation of the axis around the axis in space, or this space rotation. So these are the for the general form. However, it turns out if one takes as h of u the delta of logarithm rho, then suddenly instead of 2 4 Killing vectors pop up, and I've written.
Strictly speaking, if you take the delta, then you have only a regular space time outside this line, and then you get sort of this line will get the whole Poincaré group, and now you just get the subgroup of the Poincaré group with respect to this line.
Essentially, but if you do the limit coming from a sandwich wave, I should have said these planes are null planes and are therefore characteristic planes. So the metric can build sandwich waves, let's say. And if you take the limit, you smear this, and then take the limit to this here, you would never get these other Killing vectors. You see, the limit is differently.
So that's
what I want to emphasize.
And I think the Killing vectors are exactly the ones which leave
the null direction invariant. Right.
Can I ask saying that if I took a limit in which h approached the delta function, I would not get four
right.
vectors.
Right.
But why?
But if you take the limit coming from the Schwarzschild solution, you see the Schwarzschild solution. This is what I want to point out. The Schwarzschild solution has four Killing vectors, and I retain four Killing vectors in the boost. I want to point this out, that the boosted field has many features which carry over to the boosted field, which is in my. What I want to point out is it is more physically than an ordinary plane wave. And why the limits are different, that's another issue. It's a directional dependent limit, if you like. Yeah? Okay, so then these two additional Killing vectors come up. They all act. Notice that they are all smooth Killing fields on the whole space-time. And also notice that they act only in the null plane. Okay, so all but this was saying that the old classification fails for distributions which they didn't take into account, and we have made a new classification of PP waves when they have this delta-like distribution. Next thing is I want to tell you. That these, just to show you what this metric is all about. Now, here this is space-time. Now the curvature is purely concentrated, similar to the electric field, purely concentrated on that null plane. Outside the curvature is zero, and there's this null direction, and in this plane there's a singularity, namely where the logarithm of where rho is equal to zero of this logarithm, where the Ricci tensor is not equal to zero. So assigning, if you wish, taking Einstein's equation into account, assigning this to be an energy momentum tensor.
But Riemann is also distributional on the hyperplane.
Riemann is distribution on the hyperplane. Yeah.
What happens to Riemann on that line? The same distribution, or is it?
Well, no. It picks up an additional. I will show you this. This comes in detail. Okay. The other remark I wanted to make is that this class of matrices belong together with the Schwarzschild metric, what is called the Kerr-Schild class. The Kerr-Schild class can be written in the following form. There exists always a coordinate system such that there's a flat piece plus a null vector and a profile. And the Schwarzschild metric can be written in this form, and this pulse, or the whole class of PP wave actually, can be written in this class. Maybe I should make a little drawing so that you know what we're talking about. So there's the, maybe, so this is maybe the Kerr-Schild class, and then inside the Kirchhoff class, there are the PP waves, maybe like this, and then still a subgroup of this is what I call the impulsive gravitational, actually Roger Penrose called it the impulsive gravitational weather, so which has something like a delta profile, like this here. And the solution we're going to study, so to speak, is one very special solution out of this class here. And yes, of course. Yes.
I just wondered, is that second equation, is grad A, if PB is zero, or is it dotted with PA? Down at the bottom, is that a divergence, or is that?
That's covariantly constant.
So P is covariantly constant?
Yeah.
And P squared presumably is
zero. Yes, I'm sorry. This comes from
K dot grad K, is that constant or zero? I can't.
That's zero, I'm sorry. This comes from copying my papers onto this transparency. Yes, thank you. Let me very quickly just remind you that there's a construction of so-called impulsive waves, which goes back to Penrose. So, of this class, which is then actually larger than this. So, among the impulsive waves are the PP waves, but there are other waves. So this one is the PP wave, this parallel rate obtained by cutting Minkowski space along a null plane and then identifying different points on that null plane, like this here. A plane front and impulsive wave can be constructed by joining two Minkowski half spaces together with a warp along a null hypersurface. And this is a spherical one, so this doesn't lie in this here. Okay, so this somehow gives you an impression of what we're talking about. And I promised to my colleague Bobby not to talk too long. I try my best. Okay, so this is more or less the introduction. Now I will.
Can you collide two of these?
Yes. De Hooft has done this with Drake. Yes. I will go.
Is there a generalization from the Kerr solution? Can it have spin?
Yes. It's also been done. Has also been done for the charged Reisner-Nord spin.
So charged spinning massless.
Charged spinning, I'm not so sure. Yeah, probably. Kerr-Newman. Yeah, I'm not sure. I know definitely for Reisner-Nord spin. I know for Kerr. From Kerr, it depends in which direction you boost, along the axis or not along the axis. So it becomes more difficult. But essentially. The dominant terms are all contained in the Schwarzschild boosted metric, the relevant terms, especially for what I'm going to say.
Can you take this limit of the constant curvature background, the Schwarzschild ADS?
Okay. Let me take you now in detail to the electromagnetic piles. Before I go to the more difficult part, namely, so the idea would be now, can one assign to this plane-fronted wave, so this very special plane-fronted wave, a total energy momentum? At first one would say no, because the plane-fronted waves are in generally not asymptotically flat, and therefore it would not make sense. So before going to this, I take the difficulties apart. One difficulty is because of the distributional nature of the field, and the other one is that in gravity this field determines space-time and therefore also the asymptotic behavior. So let me first deal with something on Minkowski space, but that has the same, essentially the same distributional nature. And I will do this in some detail because I think one can learn something from this and then go to the Schwarzschild, to the boosted Schwarzschild field. So, well, here is the electromagnetic potential for the Coulomb charge, which I denote by Q. So I take the derivative, if the derivative gives me the field strength, the two-form field strength, which is this F, and now do this what we said. I boost it in the z direction and take the limit as gamma goes to infinity. Then, if you do that carefully, but it's not, there's nothing special about it, the result is, I claim, is that the one form, the potential, looks very similar to the boosted Schwarzschild field. Namely, one has this delta on the null plane, one has the logarithmic behavior, and then here this null direction.
Can I ask something?
Yes.
If you take Schwarzschild and write it in the form you had it, then Schwarzschild satisfies the linearized equation as well as the nonlinear.
Right.
As long as you talk about linearized theory, not as linearized structure,
I
forget that there's some linear metric.
Yeah. The only difference here is I will not be talking about energy of this solution, but I will be talking of the charge.
That's
the point. Okay, so let's proceed. This is here now this null plane, I told you already. Here, this is the singular line, remember the charge, but I'm only going to concentrate on the field. And then I would like to capture the charge of this solution in terms of integrals over two surfaces of the two form of the electromagnetic field. And so so here I've drawn the conformal compactified Minkowski space, and then there is this null line running out to sky plus here. Although this picture is now somewhat misleading, because the situation is not spherically symmetric. This is a plane, a null plane, running to out to infinity. So therefore, maybe adding one dimension makes it more transparent. So now I go to this retarded and advanced, usually defined coordinate with t minus r and t plus r instead of t minus z and t plus z. So these are now the usually u and v, theta and phi. Then this is the Minkowski metric written in these coordinates, and then I have to, so to speak, translate this delta on the null plane in these coordinates, and then now you see very well that there's an angular dependent, because this plane goes out to infinity, and now this is this angular dependent. Now what you should remember, this delta argument here, this is will play always the essential role. This form of the argument, when we take limits, is the essential point to remember. Now, so then the idea is to calculate F dual over two surfaces of U and V equal constant. Somewhere here. Of course, the idea would be to take it out here and take it out here. Now the question is, suppose you take, suppose we are sit somewhere here. How can we capture the electric charge sitting out here? Well, as I said, this picture is not, one should draw the null plane in this picture. The null plane in this picture looks something like this. I tried to find it in Roger Penrose's Spinner book, but the second volume is missing, so I have to draw it by hand. So this is the singular line of the field going out to infinity. That's fine. And now what about the other points of the plane? Well, if you go out so this is this line, and all directions which are parallel to this end up here at sky. But if you go not in the null direction, all the other directions are space-like on the plane, this direction, you will end up at I0. And so one goes, so I tried to draw this, so took something like this. Actually, I0, of course, is a point, but in this picture, it is the circle, so it's this point around. I only tell you this because if I want to calculate this integral let's say, at any point here, what I'm doing, I'm integrating over the angles, and therefore somewhere I will capture the field. I will capture the F, yeah, which is concentrated on here. I will somehow cut, so to speak, here through this surface in this picture, and therefore really get a contribution of the field. So this is all very elementary. Now, now I show you the calculation in somewhat detail and then skip maybe the other details. So this is, one calculates F star in these coordinates. Then here's again this characteristic argument. And then there are certain, there's a two form, you see, this is always a one form wedged into a two form here. And what I would like to have is the pullback of F star onto a two sphere. And so, well, since then U and V is constant on sphere, the pullback will be just this term here. And now the essential thing, in order to evaluate this on a two sphere, the essential thing is that this is a distribution. Now a distribution, you cannot assign to a distribution point values. Distributions are defined over the space of test functions. So I consider this as a distribution, since U and V is constant, as a distribution on a two sphere. And I say, well, I have test functions on the two sphere, and I evaluated with this test function to give me what kind of distribution it is. Well, here's the calculation. If you look at this, if you consider this argument in the delta distribution as a function of theta and phi, but it doesn't depend on phi, then you look at this and see, well, where does, and you smear it with the test function, you integrate it over S2, then you see, well, it has a zero for an angle where cosine theta is equal to this here. So the first observation is, and let me assume for the moment that this, because I don't want to see.
Is this where the line intersects your sphere?
This here. No, this here. No, not the line. I'm talking about the field. I'm talking about the field. I'm not talking about the charge. I want to get out the charge from the field. Yeah? So I capture, so there's a, it will only be non-zero when the argument of the delta distribution is zero. So here it is. Now, for simplicity, because I don't want to cut the line, let's assume this. And there you see, this can only have a solution if U is less than zero, or zero. Yeah? So then, this gives me the Heaviside step function here. It is zero if U is larger, it's larger than it is zero if U is larger than zero, and it's non-zero when U is less than zero. So this is this factor here. And then I'm left, so to speak, with the argument where this is, and then this factor is exactly cancelled by when you have a function of a delta distribution, then there is the rule that you divided by the derivative at the zero, essentially, to make it short. So this factor is exactly cancelled by a factor coming from this, and therefore the result is that the integral of the two form is proportional to the charge up to the factor 2 pi, and then there is this step function here. Well, this is not astonishing. I mean, it's actually trivial, but it's nice to see.
But isn't this theta naught where the two surface intersects?
Yes.
The plane on which the field is.
Right. Right. That's it. It is not on the line, but it's just a moment. Just let me try to explain it. Then in this picture, it's somewhere something like this here, and then it captures. Of course, it. So the field captures the charge here. So the charge is encoded in the field, and I pick it up here. And in this picture, it's more difficult. I take a two. And somewhere I intersect and I pick up the contribution, and I get. And moreover, you see, if I'm up here, there's no charge. So that's because there's no field. So the charge, so to speak, goes out to sky plus, and then there's no charge left. Yes. No, I just I get other no. So this is already, so to speak, the so this is now evaluate this. I get this at the where theta is equal to theta zero, and phi is just an ordinary. There's no phi dependent. So I mean, for this is unity the distribution.
Because
for u smaller than zero, I always have a zero for the thing. So if I integrate the delta function, surely I get one.
What happens to the test function?
Yeah, but that I get the test function at theta zero. So this.
You're just assuming that unity, basically, right?
No, this is in the definition for how you define distributions. The definition is that it spits you out. It gives you the value of the test function at the zero of the distribution.
Yeah,
yeah, this is what
value?
But it's for all test functions. It doesn't matter. This is the synonymous of saying that the integral of delta x dx is equal to 1. It's saying, in a more mathematical term, it's saying that if you smear it with test function, so delta x of capital phi of x dx is equal to phi of 0, no matter what value,
right.
for all test functions.
Right. And so it depends on phi is 0.
No, it should be for all test functions on the S2.
But he mixes terminology between that delta function as a map and then as a way to calculate.
Okay, my interest in second.
No, but this is sort of, this is the usual. One thing is the physicist, so to speak, writing, and the other one would be the mathematical writing.
What is a bit confused that you oscillate
between, for while your delta function is sort of just an ordinary one-dimensional delta function on a real line, but actually there you have a distribution of the sphere, and you cook this up somehow with the angle dependence, etc. Therefore, it must have more sense. Yes, of course, here I have two variables, so to speak, and I smear it with two variables, and if it doesn't give me any value for phi, it doesn't have a support on the distribution on a certain value of phi.
It's kind of expecting we get 4 pi cubed.
Yeah, no, but this is just because I... Yeah, this is... No, I should have used 2 and at the beginning. Yes. No. Okay. So, did I answer your question? Good. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to tell you that this can be made, of course, more in the language of going to infinity, in the language of the compactified space. I'm running out of time, so I don't know whether really I should tell you this, because one can analyze this with a formalism developed for I0 by Ashtika and Hansen. Other people have done other asymptotic structures. This is the one which I looked into. And
you're on Minkowski space.
I'm still on Minkowski space, and everything is just standard. And the question is whether I should show you this. Well, let me do it very briefly. One compactifies Minkowski space. One promotes the field one is looking at to a field on the compactified space, and it turns out that this field is singular if you have it for a point charge. If there's a charge, it has to be singular at I0, and However, it was observed that, with this conformal factor which goes to zero at the boundary, omega times f hat has a directional limit at I zero. And so one takes a curve that goes to I zero and takes that limit and calls this a new field depending on the tangent of the curve as it goes to I zero. So this is this quantity f, volt f with eta. And then one can sort of consider this eta as coordinates in the tangent space at I zero, which live on the, since this is a space-like direction which comes to I zero, it has it lives, so this is the manifold of all space-like unit vector, space-like unit vectors on this hyperbolic which whose cross section is S2. And then one projects these quantities is S onto this D by hooking it with eta, and then these quantities trivially live on D, and then these are the analog of the electric and magnetic, although being in the space-like direction, part of the electromagnetic field. And then the claim is that the charge is encoded by the integral on this tangent space to I zero. One takes the dual with respect to the 3 manifold here, integrated of one S2, and it should give you the charge, a 2 pi or charge, whatever it is. So maybe I don't go into the detailed calculations here. This can be done for our case, for the charge which runs off to Sky Plus, and calculate this, and it, of course, it gives the correct value. The only thing for doing this here is because I wanted to do some more explicit, because then for the Schwarzschild boost I will do the same thing.
It's only calculated because if you take the terms of symmetry rules of Minkowski, you have your charge sitting there and you repeat those also at I naught. And now you are doing boost. You just look at the same chart in other coordinates. Therefore, you just see what happens. What is the boost doing?
Yeah, but it's a singular boost. You see, the charge goes out to Scribe plus instead to I plus. So there is a difference. There's still a difference. I mean, remember that the integral drops to zero after the charge has left after u equal to zero retarded time. So there is a difference. And moreover, one could say, well, I don't know. I give you this electromagnetic field. Do the analysis a la Ashtecker-Hansen. Okay, so I skip the calculation for this. And now I turn, since time is running, I turn to the energy momentum of the black hole. So, well, here again is the metric. P is the null vector, F is the profile in general. Here are the properties, and here is this very special profile, which I now have written some. It is always the same argument. P dotted into X gives this argument, which we had, and the same thing here. Now, as you know, there are two concepts of total energy or energy momentum in general relativity. The one at spatial infinity encodes the total energy contained in the system, while the Bondi quantity gives you what is at a certain instant of retarded time. And we would like to find out whether one can assign for this very the metric which has this distribution and it belongs to the plane fronted waves a total energy momentum. So let me tell you the naive calculation. The naive calculation is based on the following observation. One could look at it in two different ways. Namely, one says, well, on this space time actually we have two matrices, namely the physical metric and a flat metric. Let's work with the flat metric and do all the things, so to speak, let's take the flat metric as a reference metric. The other thing would be the other attitude to say, well, this metric is almost everywhere flat, except on the null plane. So let's still work with these coordinates and just use the expression that are usually written down for asymptotically flat fields and calculate this quantity. So this is the naive calculations, and we have turned to an expression which is in one of Khrushchev's paper, but actually he refers again to Ashtika Hansen. So one assumes that there is a four-dimensional coordinate system in the neighborhood of I0, where the metric goes to asymptotic flat form, where the powers of R, the metric falls off certain powers of R, and also the derivative. Now assume that this is the coordinate system that fulfills this, assume this, and calculate this expression here. Now, so this is the Riemann tensor. This are the Kerr-Schild coordinates, which I just showed you, and alpha is a constant vector with respect to these coordinates. Do these calculations, and the result is, well, if one calculates the integrand, then one has the scalar product of P, the null vector, with this constant vector alpha. And then notice, of course, it's a linear in the derivatives of the profile, as I told you, and it's like this here.
Is your metric asymptotically flat?
I have not said anything about it. I pretend. I use these coordinates and I calculate. Here is the expression, and again, one has to take the limit of this integral as r goes t is constant, r goes to infinity, and one can then show again, in the sense of distribution, that this limit gives you this here. I'm sorry for the 2 pi again, which is it so happened that it the main point why this converges is the negative homogeneity of the delta distribution. So the main issue is and the interplay of the logarithm. So the main thing is, can you see from here? Is that the delta of lambda of times x is equal 1 over lambda delta x. Yeah? So what essentially I do, for this integral, t and r constant, of course this only applies to constants, of course. So I pull out an r from here, and it gives me a 1 over r, and then I have t over r here in the argument, and then there's always a 0. So there's always a contribution from this here, and then I integrate, I get a 1, or I get a 2 pi, and that's it.
Was this covariantly constant vector field points along the line?
Yes. Well, it's a vector field which points along the line. So here's the result for this calculation. So what do we observe? Well, it is proportional to the null vector, and therefore the ADM momentum is a null vector. Let me, before I finally comment this, so it's light-like, let me go, the other thing is the Bondi mass, which is a generalization of the Koma integral, which again has to do with the derivative, with the gravitational field strength integrated over a two surface. And let me again start with this coordinate. Again, take as my reference vector, the constant vector in these coordinates, and then the Gerhardt-Winnicott integral is this quantity here. It is the covariant derivative of this vector skewed and integrated, the dual of it and integrated over the two surface. Now, notice that I've not emphasized this, but coming back to this other, notice that the integrand itself, from the EDM expression here, is exactly the same as this here. So therefore, the only thing I have to do is to evaluate this instead of at I zero, at chi plus. And the result is this here. The bonding four momentum dotted scalar product with this constant vector alpha, which I'm free to choose, is the limit as v goes to infinity, and then there's again this characteristic angular dependence in the argument, now expressed instead of t and r, expressed in terms of the retarded and advanced coordinates. And again, this factor here is cancelled, so to speak, by the argument here, and a careful analysis shows that in the same way as for the charge calculation, one picks a delta, one picks a Heaviside step function of minus u times this scalar product here. So the result is, of this naive calculation, is that the bounding four momentum is equal to the EDM momentum for u smaller than zero. Remember, u is the line, or u is the plane, the null plane, which here is depicted as a line, where the pulse goes out to infinity. So we have calculated this quantity and this quantity, and we show that this quantity is equal to up to here, and then it drops to zero. And then it drops to zero. Because all the energy is radiated out to infinity. So which particle and field escapes to infinity and leaving the flat space here. So this is the now the naive calculation. Now the question is about asymptotic flatness of this. So this is what one would expect on physical. Maybe I should say the reason why I'm giving this talk this week might be this here. The energy momentum of an isolated system cannot be null, by Ashtekar and Horowitz.
That's the reason why everything is recorded.
but not only these two gentlemen, also Baik and Kruschel have what that is. Well, there are certain assumptions from which this follows, and one assumption, of course, is that there exists non-singular space, like, irrespectively of this asymptotic flatness, there's certainly one thing which is not fulfilled. There exists non-singular space-like surfaces which reach spatial infinity and cross-section and so on and so on. Nevertheless, I want to make a point that it is reasonable to assign to this metric a total energy of the form that comes out from this naive calculation. And I will now try to tell you a little bit in the 5 minutes, maybe, if you
that we have to make the same phone call as yesterday.
At half, this is at half past, well, I remember.
That's
no, whenever you leave, it's fine. I thank you for your patience for 1 hour. So the idea is to make an Ashtekar-Hansen construction for this metric. And well, this just gives you the general scheme of Ashtekar-Hansen now for the gravitational field. Because of time, I will not go through this. It's similar to the one for the electric field, but of course now not on the flat background. It works with the curvature. Yeah?
But that can satisfy the Ashtekar-Hansen condition that space is infinite.
This I would like to discuss with you. I tell you what. I tell you what we have done, and then we can discuss it. I tell you what I know about. I mean, no. No, it cannot. Because it cannot, but I have a strong argument, I think, that it does in the distributional sense. You see, the metric has no... If you have a distribution, there is nothing like a point value for distribution.
Yeah, but what you have to do in a way, you have to give a distribution generalization of the Ashtagaya.
That's it. And this is what I would like to, in the 2 days you remain here, you stay here, to discuss maybe with you, or with others, whoever are prepared to do this with me. Now, okay, so here is the metric again. Here is the metric, this is the fluff part, this is the non-fluff part, and one can then, so let's do it the other way around, since I cannot really prove this asymptote, but I do a compactification like the flat space compactification, and see where it leads me to. And, well, actually, since I'm going, only want to take the limit out to infinity, simply it is to just replace u by 1 over u and v by 1 over v. So if I do this, and I go over to this Ashtagaya levels which live on this hyperbole, I project it with, so this is the Riemann quantity in the limit.
The hyperbole now is the coordinate hyperbole, because from your space-time you have, you cannot define the hyperbole because there will be something missing there. And the main issue of this will be, can you do those integrations without having the whole hyperbole, how we can make this precise?
Right. So, yes, this comes to the heart of it, I think. So I do this, where eta is this tangent vector of the curve to what I call it, let's call it I naught for the time being. One does this, one gets again these quantities, I don't give you any details, and one promotes this as coordinates on the hyperbole, where now instead of having, you see there are the two angles, theta and phi, and one coordinate along this here, which I call tau, which is defined by this. This is the quantity. One integrates the quantity in the prescribed way, and that's the result. The result is the result that we obtained by the...
The same calculation as before. Because you use still the flat coordinates, and you sort of, you are redoing in this metric,
well,
you are redoing
actually, the calculation. But Bernd, I'm free to do my conformal as I like. The only thing I have to show that I really compactify.
Yeah, the tricky thing now is supposed to do the following. Instead of doing the calculation you did, we now take some coordinate system which is in the class respected by the Ashtagaya Hansen gain. And then in this, but there will now be a freedom where this point of this line is missing. I can do nasty things. And then you have to show that if you redo the calculation, that you get the same result.
Well, again, I mean, we already agreed it cannot satisfy it in a strict sense. So one has to reformulate it in the sense of distribution by smearing with test functions.
Yeah, but it's sort of, the thing is that at the moment, the object, sort of the surface where we want to smear is not there.
Well, I can always take a two surface.
Yeah, but then it depends on the core. Then you have to see whether the
choice. And then I move out with this surface.
Yeah.
I will. Okay. Let me also, in order that people I think want to go, let me finish and then we can. If you have something very really important to say, you're free to see this, of course. I don't want. So one remark is, for example, we have worked with the idea is that everything, when it's asymptotically flat, everything is encoded in the Weyl tensor, not in the Riemann tensor. So either it's vacuum, or you have to have some fall-off conditions for the matter. Now, here, as I told you, there's a line, a singular line, which can be interpreted as energy-momentum tensors going out to infinity. Therefore, one can look, so to speak, at the what the energy-momentum tensor does. This is no problem for I0, because the line goes out in the null direction, and therefore you will not meet it at I0. So this is okay. The other thing is, and this maybe might help a little bit, is what is the limit of the metric? I have not talked about it because I think this needs more work done. But look at the profile function. I have now again switched again to T and R coordinates since I'm going out to I0. I want to go to R to R equal to infinity. And consider this again as a distribution on the two spheres by which I go then out. Then again, because of this property here, by going from here to here, you see, there's a 1 over R. T is constant, R goes to infinity, so there will always be a zero. And there's a logarithm of R times sine theta, and this 1 over R together with this logarithm goes to zero. And this is the specific thing about the boosted Schwarzschild. This logarithm, if I would have here a plane wave, it would never work. So it's exactly this weak increase, if you want to say, going out to in space, gives me this. So you see, the non-flat part, as I go out to I equal infinity, it really vanishes in the distributional sense. So this retrospective gives me the right, in a certain way, and we should discuss this, in which way it really gives me the right to work with this.
Yes.
Your phone call.
The question is such a big fact that even their secretary doesn't answer the phone.
Oh.
All I get is a recorded message saying,
yeah,
leave a message explaining what you want, and a person appropriate to your level.
Okay. I will finish in. In 2 minutes, I guess, I hope. Try to do the same thing, what I call I plus. What it is, Albert. This constant vector field with respect to the Kerr-Schild coordinates, does it fulfill the conditions that Gerhard Winnicker say that it has to be an asymptotic killing field? Well, we claim yes. Because if one takes the symmetric covariant derivative, again one gets some derivative of the wave profile. And again, because of the properties I've shown in the sense of distribution, it does go as V bar goes to zero, so V to infinity does go to zero in the sense of distribution. Moreover, by this, since the Lie derivative on the volume form of the full metric is equal to this quantity with respect to alpha, is equal to this quantity, but since at the beginning I told you the volume form is equal to the flat volume form, then this is zero, since this is constant, and therefore this implies that one has the gauge condition which picks out from the super translation, once this is one gauge, the translation, so the divergence of alpha is zero. So this is satisfied because of this condition. Also, I have also here's the limit of this constant field as we go out on what I call scribe plus. It has only this U component, which is also correct. And then, moreover, we can, so to speak, promote this integrand of the Winnicker integral to the conformal metric and has this quantity. And since you have calculated this, one immediately gives you the same result back. This is where we stand, so to speak, and probably need some more input to tie down what you said. Is it asymptotically flat? Let me finish by saying it's not asymptotically flat in the usual sense, but I want to make a claim here that it is reasonable to consider this in a generalized sense asymptotically flat. Maybe I think I should stop here. Thank you for your attention.
Maybe there's some rigorous notion of things you get by boosting things that are not symmetrically flat up to the velocity of light. This is sort of set up a balance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, somehow you said this is very special because it comes from the boost. It retains certain properties like four killing vectors. Of course, the group is different. And also, this is a very characteristic fall-off, so to speak, which wouldn't work for a general plane wave. It just wouldn't work.
But you could certainly try, if you forget about field equations, characterize class of space-time which have this property. And then you would see whether for this class you always can define those options. This is certainly a possibility. Yeah. And then because, you see, in a way, because on the solution, the Kerschild piece has some invariant meaning. You can always promote it then by doing arbiter coordinate if you keep those information along. Therefore, because your flat background is really invariably tied to the solution, you are in a way you can take this as a definition if you want. Now, comparing it with other space time, this would be complicated because suppose we do the following. Suppose you take a thing with a profile.
Right. Okay?
Then
right.
Sort of a reasonable space time. You just take this space time and look at its asymptotic in a conventional sense.
Yeah.
Then you'll find that you get, let's say, if you talk about a null infinity. That you get a scry, but certain pieces are missing on this scry.
Right.
And then your whole discussion would be, can you, if you now do the limit process of making those profiles to the limit you want, then on this scry, you get sort of more and more pieces. Then you can characterize the allowed coordinates there in a way that then your analog of the Bondi for momentum gets an invariant meaning. And there the problem which will arise could be the following. You see, if you do Bondi type asymptotics, if you do this locally, I mean just along the null generator, you cannot really define the four momentum because this has to do with the fact that in the super translation, the translation are singled out. But this has to do with the fact that you have complete sphere. If you just have patches of sky, then you do not get the complete sphere, then you will get a four momentum, but you still have the super translation freedom in, and you cannot figure it out.
Yeah.
This is
but
what I expect will happen there.
What I claim is that I do get a sphere on sky.
If you use this preferred flat background metric, then you can, by the help of the flat background, which is unique, you can fix this.
Bernd, it cannot work for an arbitrary pulse. It cannot work because if the profile doesn't have the logarithm, it would not work.
Yeah, but this is.
It would. You could say, well, let's have a fall off which is stronger than that. Then the work from Kusch and Bobbischoff, then the four momentum is zero, identically zero. If I have a stronger divergence, then it will not exist. So you really have to have this interplay between the pulse and the profile in order to give you. What I would like to point out is really we have a sphere in the sense of distribution. In the sense of this, you cannot talk that there's one point missing there because you have the singularity there. Because on test function on S2.
Yeah, but if you talk about distribution on a manifold, usually the manifold is given to you. I think there's no theory of distribution on a manifold available where you take sort of the puncture sphere and talk sort of about distribution of the rest, which becomes sort of singular at the point you have taken out. I think these are two things. Usually what you have is the manifold is given and you have objects there. And what you have to do in a way, you have to find sort of the points for possible support of your distribution and the distributional thing. But I think probably there's quite an easy explanation. I think if you forget about field equation, it's probably right that you can characterize the class of space, like the one you have there, for example, you just put a nice function next to the logarithm, then the field equation will be ruined, but you have still the same geometry. And then for this class, you'll always have the same properties.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But this is sort of then, it's not too interesting, but the thing is whether there is a class of solution satisfying the field equation, which is more general than this and has properties like this. I think this is the question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Otherwise, you are just geometricizing sort of one object. You have this, like if you're the Schwarzschild distribution, just you have it. That doesn't matter. We'll talk about coordinates.
Well, if I just may reply, I think this could be input in two ways. First of all, it gives, so to speak, this solution, which is very artificial, very special, some more physical strength, I would say. It's one thing. The other thing is one could think about generalizing the concept of working with distribution like object.
Distribution, yeah. All the asymptotics was not invented to describe structures in a complicated way. It was invented to describe structures plus radiation. And this is where, therefore, I think if you could demonstrate that there are classes of solutions of Einstein's equation which behave like this plus radiation, this would be very interesting. But this can be very hard.
I have an elementary question. If one starts from a static solution, which is not circular symmetric, say a Weyl solution, in the case of to keep matter simple, in electrodynamics, is a charge with, say, a dipole and a quadrupole, and then one tries to boost it to light velocity. Is there a way to do this and obtain a sensible limit without, as it were, stripping off the higher order multipoles?
Well, as far as I remember, I went once a little bit into that direction, and I think it's almost the 1/r terms which somehow contribute then in the limit. One has, you see, take Reisner-Nordström. Reisner-Nordström is difficult in the sense that you have to let the charge also go to zero, but then the question is, what is the electric field, for example? You just end up with an energy momentum tensor, but with no electric field. And so I think it is just... And there's a contribution coming from this. And I think I once tried this. For example, if you have something... Because you work on multipoles. Yeah? Suppose I take a field which is... I characterize it just by the multipoles. And I look what remains at infinity after boosting it. I don't remember whether one has to go with all the multipoles to zero. I only know something about care. Yes, this I remember. You can do this for care. And it is not necessary to go with the angular parameter A, with the care parameter, to zero. This can stay as it is. Why? Because this is the angular momentum per mass. And this can stay constant. So you go with the mass to zero, you go with the angular momentum to zero, but A stays constant, and this has a limit. It has a limit, and it has been done.
Mm-hmm. And somehow the Kerr-Schild property seems to be essential for this maneuver. That at least in the limit, you not only do a boost, but you also obtain this Kerr-Schild character, which you have in Schwarzschild and in
right. Kerr-Bach. Yeah, that could very well. In Reisner-Nordström too.
Also,
will you have this form with multiple moments if you include multiple moments in the Kerr-Schild form?
If you take Weyl solutions, I think most of the Weyl solutions do not have Kerr-Schild form. Because this means that this preferred vector, which calls cross P, is a null vector in both metrics. And it's a killing vector in both. This is killing vector, but it's also a killing vector for the one-plane. Strong restriction.
You had a question, no? Okay. So thank you.
Thank you.